This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is actually your second special podcast of the week. You know how I like to do these mining company CEO podcasts from time to time, usually maybe one a month, but here now it's the second one of the week. Why? Well, it's kind of a special situation. First of all, you know, the one we had a couple of days ago with Dr. Henny, geez, why would we not want to talk to him? So when that opportunity came up, I jumped on it, right? Because so many of us own so many of the companies with which he's involved. If you've not had a chance to listen to that one, and gosh, if you're involved not only in the Nevada King that we talked about, but Newfound Gold or Aloro or Novo, you need to listen to it. If you haven't listened to it yet, it's great information. So then, if you also are a listener to those Sprott Money News Weekly wrap-ups that I've been doing now for a number of years, then you might have caught the one last week with Rick Rule. It was great always to talk to Rick. I hadn't had him in for a couple of months. And we must have spent half the show talking about uranium because so many questions had come in wanting Rick to discuss uranium and some of the things Sprott Inc. is doing with uranium. And when Rick and I were talking that through before we started to record, I mentioned, hey, there's a guy that I've met recently named Scott Melby. I bet you know him. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, I actually knew Scott's dad. That's how long I've been at it. And so that kind of tripped an idea in my mind that, you know, I first met Scott Melby and discussed Uranium Royalty Corp back in late February. And I thought, this is a really neat idea. And then when I was talking to Rick last week, I thought, well, it's been now coming up on 3 months. I should reach out to Scott again. And then almost by magic, Dan Amaduri's team reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to talk to Scott Melby again? They just got listed on the NASDAQ and a lot of exciting things going on. So the whole thing came together. So now here we are. It is Thursday morning and I've got Scott on the phone. Again, Scott Melby is the CEO of Uranium Royalty Corp, the first of its kind uranium royalty company. And we'll talk about what is significant about that. I am a shareholder, but I bought some back in February after I first spoke with Scott. And I just bought some more earlier this week. So this is a particular interest to me as well. Scott, that long intro, man. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it.
Well, great. Thanks. It's good to be with you again. And we're happy to have you as a shareholder and thrilled to talk to your listeners today about uranium. You know, as resource investors, we're all very excited about, I think we're truly in a super cycle on a lot of commodities, gold for all the obvious reasons of fiscal irresponsibility of governments, and with copper and battery metals, with, the amount of copper and nickel and cobalt and everything, lithium that goes in electric vehicles, and just the recovery of the economy. I think we're going to need a lot of commodities, and uranium is no exception. And it's really has its own set of drivers that really have a lot of eyes coming back on to our sector and a lot of investment capital coming back in. But we're still very much in the first and second innings, if you will, of this current uranium bull market. But it's really driven by, you know, the nuts and bolts of uranium supply and demand fundamentals. Obviously, Fukushima was a major hit to both the demand and the supply side. But now, 10 years later, we're seeing, you know, production levels having cut back dramatically, as much as 40, 50 million pounds below what consumption is annually. And we've seen demand just take off around the world, large reactors being built. China and elsewhere, we're now seeing the small modular reactors becoming a big deal in the United States, Canada, maybe a better fit in heavy renewable grids or competing with cheap natural gas. So whatever the reason, but we're seeing nuclear power grow. But the biggest is that mega trend towards clean and green energy. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we agree with the debate behind the climate change discussion, the fact is states, countries, are moving towards cleaner energy and carbon-free energy, and nuclear clearly fits that bill. In the United States, we're 20% of our electricity supplies, but we're over 50% of the clean energy, carbon-free energy in the U.S. So it was not surprising, excuse me, this week that the word is trickling out of the White House that the Biden administration will likely extend tax credits to nuclear power plants. The similar subsidies that are given to wind and solar are being extended to nuclear. Listen, I'm not a subsidy guy, but it was awfully unfair for the nuclear plants that run 24/7 and produce no carbon emissions to have to compete against renewables, wind and solar, under the guise that, well, they're so cheap. Well, they're so cheap because of the heavy subsidies behind them. But it looks like the Biden administration will level the playing field towards nuclear. That's really good news for the existing fleet of 93 reactors around the U.S. Excuse me. But also very encouraging for this next generation of small modular reactors that are being built and proposed in around the world, and particularly in the United States and Canada. So where we fit with Uranium Royalty Corp., as you mentioned, we just listed on the NASDAQ last week, which was a big step for us. We're not only the only uranium royalty company in the space, but we're now the only, you know, pure play uranium company listed on the NASDAQ. So that's already, I think, doubled our trading volumes daily since that happened last week, which is great. We just are in the process of completing a raise, a $25 million raise this week that will give us some powder in our war chest to go out and acquire physical uranium, royalty streams, and add to our portfolio. We're a very young company. I mean, we only went public a year and a half ago, but as we stand today, 15 royalties in our portfolio, including two of the world's largest uranium mines in Canada. So we think it's a great vehicle for investors who like the uranium story, believe in this sort of resurgence of nuclear energy, and want to invest in a pure play uranium investment, but have the diversification advantages of us investing in projects in every major uranium district in the world.
And all of this is taking place against a backdrop, like you said, of just commodities in general are soaring. For obvious reasons, yet uranium is still like, what is it, $30 a pound or something like that, Scott?
Yeah, Craig, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's why we think we're in the first or second inning, because we've seen the investor interest coming back to uranium stocks on this sort of green energy mega trends. Mm-hmm. But the uranium price is still at $30 a pound, which is well below the incentive price for new mines to start up. Well, that's good for the investment narrative, because it's causing a coming squeeze in uranium supplies going forward. If demand for uranium is at pre-Fukushima levels, but production is 50 million pounds below that, we're drawing down whatever secondary supplies were built up during these post-Fukushima years. We're getting to the point now where those inventories are largely diminishing, and we need new mines, but we don't have the incentives out there for those to move forward. So if we need new uranium mines around the world being developed by 2025, well, we're already within that lead time for that to happen. So it's a classic squeeze building that's not dissimilar to what happened in 2005 to 2007. We saw the price of uranium go from $10 a pound to $137 a pound on very similar kind of drivers. But I think today, you know, back then it was just the promise of new reactors being built in China and around the world. Well, now we're building them. There's 54 reactors have come online in the last 8 years. We have 54 more under construction and more being proposed every month. So it is an exciting dynamic. We did see the uranium price begin to move in the last month or so on one of the most interesting of catalysts. It's not the utilities coming back to the market and buying, which they have to do. They really have a looming liability of unfilled commitments that they need to come to the market and procure. But it was really the junior uranium companies like Uranium Energy Corp, Denison, and others, and including Uranium Royalty Corp, we picked up some physical uranium, at a very attractive price below $30 a pound. Because we see such value in uranium at $30 or less, if that was a mine producing those pounds, it would be one of the lowest cost mines in the world. And so junior mining companies have gone out and bought uranium and essentially stockpiled it as a way to bolster their balance sheets and help them move forward and get into production. But what it's had the effect of is taking 10 million pounds or more now off the uranium market in the last month or so. And we've seen prices go from the $27 range up to the $30-$31 range today. So, your listeners are very familiar with copper or gold. Yeah. We're not as liquid or efficient markets as those big commodities. So a small amount of demand hitting the spot market can really have outsized impacts. So if just this amount of junior uranium company buying can move the uranium price $3 a pound, imagine what the utilities coming back and contracting at normal levels again. So we have all the right ingredients here for not only a uranium recovery, but quite a robust bull market developing. And again, it's, the equities have moved quite a bit already, but we're very much in the first or second inning.
Rick, I mentioned Rick and I had recorded this thing last Friday. Mm-hmm. And I'll put a link on this page for anybody that missed it to the Sprott Money site so that, if you want to hear what Rick Rule has, if anybody's going to be able to talk about where we are in this, in the early stages of this, it'd be Rick. Scott, you'd mentioned to me before we began the recording, this new Sprott Inc. Uranium Trust or whatever. I don't know anything about it. I do this stuff for Sprott Money, but I don't know anything about what Sprott Inc. is doing. But you'd mentioned fundamentally that was kind of a big deal. What's that about?
Yeah, that's really a huge catalyst, which, as you mentioned, has just hit in the last week or so. But there are two companies that exist today that purely are set up to buy and warehouse physical uranium on behalf of investors. One is in traded on the London Exchange called Yellowcake PLC, and one is traded in Toronto called Uranium Participation Corp, or UPC. And it was announced last week that Sprott is going to take over UPC, acquire the inventories, and structure it under a Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, and with the objective of listing that in the United States. Hmm. This has huge implications because the network of retail and institutional investors that Sprott has, people that like to invest in not only resource stocks, but also physical commodities, whether it be silver, copper, gold. So now there'll be another product alongside of those that they can market to their extensive network. And who knows how much money they can raise. Yeah. And all the money that they would raise for this new physical uranium trust would go directly into uranium, physical uranium purchases from off the open market. So you could have, 100, 200, $300 million raised in a structure like that, pouring into the uranium spot market on top of what's already happened. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of talk about it in the uranium space as something that could be quite transformational. UPC was founded back in the last bull market, and it would be interesting if this sort of development was added in a similar way to the current bull market that we're seeing develop.
Soaking up more of the available supply. There's precedent, as you mentioned, for price to just skyrocket many times higher in a short period of time. And again, there's precedent today. I just was writing today about iron ore is now at all-time highs. We all know about what lumber has done, up five times in the last last year. All these commodities going like crazy. You would think, in this kind of commodity bull market and people wanting hard assets, this story, here's something that hadn't taken off yet. Man, I can sure see a scenario where the price of uranium takes off.
Yeah, no, it really feels like it. I had the fortunate opportunity to testify before the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee back on Capitol Hill about 4 weeks ago and speak on a panel talking about revitalizing nuclear energy and American leadership. And, you know, there I sat in front of the committee's Republican and Democrat senators and really had sort of unanimous support for nuclear energy and a domestic uranium fuel cycle resurgence. And, you know, that wouldn't have happened 10, 15 years ago. You would have Democrats opposing and you'd have Republicans supporting. But I think, you know, whether you're on the right side of the argument and you see uranium as part of an all of the above energy strategy, along with coal, gas, oil, nuclear, wind, solar, or you're on the left side that is really focused on lower carbon energy sources, we fit the bill. So we're one of the few things today that's truly bipartisan in nature. And there, as you know, there's not many things that fit that category. So I think the industry is really in a unique situation where we're seeing growth in nuclear energy, and the uranium, global uranium industry is going to need to play catch up. And for investors, that presents a really interesting narrative and special opportunity to participate in that. So Uranium Royalty Corp is a great way to play it. Again, we're excited about the prospects this year and going forward.
Well, let's tie all that back together there. As we, you know, in the last part of this podcast, you're now on NASDAQ, UROY, UROY.
UROY. Right? Yeah.
If you were on the French exchange, you could be Leroy. anyway, UROY, URC up in Canada, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, like I said, I bought some shares because I thought this made sense last time. We all in the precious metal miners, we know, or at least most of us know, if you're in the shares, there are mining companies, junior mining companies, exploration companies, and there are royalty and streaming companies.
Yeah.
You have built here a uranium royalty company. So rather than going out and staking the ground and trying to find it yourself, it's a royalty company. Now, so maybe explain to everybody the benefits of that and how this can kind of complement the portfolio, diversified out of just simply gold and silver, like I've done with a little bit of my money.
Yeah.
But also why this approach maybe makes the most sense.
Yeah, well, you know, the idea is not a new one. And, you know, it's become an enormous success and huge industry in the base and precious metals, whether it's Franco-Nevada, Sandstone, Wheaton Precious, Royal Gold. These are companies that don't own the mines. They don't have the huge workforce and overhead and G&A. They basically go out and invest in future production of, in our case, uranium mines. So we'll hold a royalty on future production, or we'll hold a right to offtake a certain amount of uranium in a streaming arrangement. And so, you know, we can have five employees and triple, quadruple the size of the company and not have any impact on G&A and overhead. So it's a very efficient model. All the money we raise essentially goes to accretive investments in the space. And, you know, we've added to that a little bit besides the royalties and streams with physical uranium. We took elected an option under a contract we had with Yellowcake PLC out of London and their contract with Kazatomprom, the Kazakh National Uranium Company. And we took 350,000 pounds of uranium and put that into the fund. So what you're getting is pure exposure to the uranium market upside, but also in these 15 different royalties that we have in the portfolio, you're sharing in the upside of production rates, extended resources and mine life. But we don't have any of the downside of the cash calls. You know, we typically have a top line royalty interest. We're not having to put up the cash calls for the expenses to produce or bring the mine into production. So it's a very efficient model. You know, the success that companies like Franco-Nevada, I mean, I saw their revenues are $250 million a quarter now for Franco. And, you know, we're early stages. We realize that we're only been in public domain here for a year and a half, but we've already grown quite dramatically. And two of our really key assets are the Cigar Lake and MacArthur River Mine royalties. That these are these are mines that would be like the Grasberg mine in Indonesia in the gold industry, or the Escondida mine in copper in Chile, Cigar Lake and MacArthur River. They're mines operated by Cameco and Orano, ore grades 100 times the world average. And we're able to give our shareholders exposure, you know, a small sliver of the value of those operations, but quite an attractive one for those seeking exposure to uranium and get two of the best uranium mines in the world as part of that asset mix.
And you look at this going forward, Scott, you mentioned Franco, Nevada. Mm-hmm. That's been, I think, my largest holding in my minor IRA. Everybody knows what that means here on the site. Since I started it, like in 2015, and Franco, Nevada, even all during that whole period when gold was going sideways through 2018, mm-hmm. Franco, Nevada went up every single year.
Yeah. It's an incredible model. I mean, Franco is a good example where they trade at a premium to NAV, and they're out, you know, acquiring assets at a discount to NAV. Now it's getting more competitive in gold space. You have more gold royalty companies, so you know the available assets that become available, they're having to pay less of a discount in the gold market, but as the early mover in the uranium space, and we won't be the only game in town forever, but we are for now, mm-hmm. We're able to acquire these assets at, I think everything we've done today has been under 0.5 NAV. So, that's pretty good acquisitions, and, we'll continue to raise money to buy at creative assets, and the company will just grow. You know, I hope this time next year we have 20 royalties in the portfolio, and we just continue to grow the company that way. And then as the uranium price improves, so does our revenue outlook improves along with it.
Yeah. And visibility now on the NASDAQ, awareness of commodity, hard asset, bull market. You've got really brilliant minds like Rick and some of the people. I mean, he's not with Sprott Inc. anymore; he's retired. But those folks, though, they know what they're talking about. I don't think I own enough. Actually, I'm sitting here talking.
Rick was a very early shareholder, and one of kind of the there are a number of kind of key people behind the formation of the company. Obviously, Amir Adnani being one of the big founders, but Marin Katusa, Rick Rule, Warren Gilman out of Hong Kong, Darren Milmeister out of Extract Capital. They all saw the success that this model had seen, mm-hmm. based in precious metals, wanted to bring it to uranium. And all of us are just, I mean, couldn't be more bullish on the uranium price today. And again, for the most fundamental of reasons, supply and demand mismatch and a situation that's developed here that should really see the uranium price break out of this $30 range and move towards 40 and above. So, it's exciting time, and it's nice to be in a world that's going increasingly towards green energy and carbon-free energy, to be able to fit that bill with nuclear power and really be able to make a meaningful contribution and provide 24/7 power, not intermittent power when the sun shines and the wind blows. I think we really have a unique opportunity going forward.
No doubt about it. Anything else we should keep our eyes on in the months ahead before you and I speak again?
No, I think just the next, thing you're going to see, with all this interest and activity in the uranium spot market, I mean, the people who actually need the uranium are the utility companies, and they have huge unfilled requirements going forward and growing. So, when they start coming to the market and contracting long-term, midterm, and spot, I think you'll really see a lot of pressure put on the price. So keep an eye on the utilities, and not just Duke Power, Exelon, or Dominion out of the United States. Look towards CGN and CNNC out of China. It's probably time for them mm-hmm. to go back into the long-term market and start contracting again. And that really, China will be larger than the United States in terms of installed nuclear capacity within this decade. So a huge China driver to the story as well. So,
do they mine uranium? Are there natural stores of uranium in China, or do they have to?
For a country that big, they really don't have. They're not blessed with really great deposits. They have some domestic mining, but they largely rely on imports.
Yeah,
of uranium from Kazakhstan and in through the port of Shanghai. And they also rely on mines that they've acquired, invested in around the world. The country of Namibia, the entire uranium mining industry is largely controlled by the Chinese today, and they see it as a real strategic investment.
Yeah, they do.
And they play the long game, as we all know. And so, you know, they're going to secure what they need to keep their nuclear power growth moving forward. I think the figure was 70 gigawatts by 2025 was the latest number in the five-year Communist Party plans. And when they get behind a plan, it's a state-owned initiative and a national initiative. So, they're going to consume a lot of uranium, and it's a global market.
You know, let's throw that log on the fire as we wrap up. I just saw a thing yesterday about the UK saying, man, there's not very many of these battery metals and rare earths around. We got to start stockpiling these. Wait yeah. until the world figures that out about uranium, too.
Yeah, I'm engaged through a lot of policy think tanks and such in D.C. where the automakers, you know, even just in electric vehicles, they're beginning to realize that, you know, how much copper, how much cobalt, nickel, lithium goes into these. And if we're going to have clean energy vehicles, it has to be clean energy electricity. And so I think there's a real awakening towards mining and resource commodities that are going to be needed, whether it's the green economy or just our economy getting back to normal after COVID. If it's not born and it's not grown, it has to be mined. So, a lot of commodities are really going to see, I truly am a believer in this commodity super cycle, and uranium is squarely right in that narrative.
Yep. All right, everybody. Now, again, you never, ever just take my word for it. You got to do all of your own due diligence. You got to think about whether something fits into your time horizon, your risk tolerance, and everything else that goes with it. So you got to do your homework. You can start on this page. I'll have links to the Uranium Royalty Corp homepage. You can click around there. I'm sure there's news releases and other important information on that site. You can type in the ticker symbols. Again, UROY is now the symbol in the U.S., URC up in Canada. Man, if it looks like something, though, to an early stage of what seems to be an overlooked asset bull market, streaming royalty company like this, or I shouldn't say streaming, just a royalty company like this, certainly is intriguing. Scott Melby, man, great to talk to you again. Please go out there and just keep working away for all of us shareholders, and let's make sure we keep in touch.
Excellent. Thanks, Craig. It's been a pleasure.
It has been my pleasure as well. And from all of us here at TFMR, thank you for listening. We'll have another CEO conversation sometime soon.